Welcome to It's Amazing Radio. We're back. Another week of lively mixed martial arts conversation. Not exactly the largest crew today. Got me, Dr. Law, and we got Kid Presentable in the house.
Hey, we got the two live crew version of the show this week.
Exactly. For various reasons. One gentleman not being able to find a computer in Syracuse.
And another man celebrating Easter in a week different from everyone else.
Yeah, I still think there must be a different name for this holiday. I'm telling you, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand why Greek Easter would be different. I thought they believe in the same Jesus.
I know, I don't. We really should ask some more questions next time. All right. Well, a lot of stuff happened. It was
the
nice.
The MMA drought is officially over. Nice little UFC, like, month-long hiatus we had there.
Yeah, it was – didn't really know what to do with ourselves. It's really nice that we chose to start a podcast during the biggest drought in, like, 2 or 3 years.
I think I rediscovered an alcohol problem. I had been pretty sober for about 2 straight years, and I've been getting drunk every Friday now. It's kind of been something to do in place of MMA. Look what you've done to me, Dana White.
Yeah, and people don't normally say this, but it's been a real improvement on your character. Alcohol's good for you.
Yeah, I was a little bit of a drag. I understand, but it also had to do with present company at the time. But that's another story.
Right on. All right. So this is what we had on Friday. We had Ultimate Fighter, where the only guy actively trying to be a dick on that show this season, Chris Tickle, lost. He got submitted by Joe Proctor. Proctor of Joe Lozon School, so he made a guy tap. No real surprise there. And then on Bellator, I don't know, everybody was concerned because at number 10 on our bantamweight rankings, we wrote that number 10 got to be the winner of the Makovsky versus Dantes fight. Well, fans of Edward Dantes, he's now number 10. Bellator belt, who gives a shit? He's number 10 in our rankings.
Hey, well he does have the title. I mean, Dantes looked, you know, from all things I've heard about him, he seems to be, you know, an intriguing prospect. Another Nova Uniao kid coming up. But, you know, we have to – Makovsky was a champion. That's why I had to argue for him. You got to beat the champion, you know. Even though it's expected, like back when Lyoto fought Rashad, you still have – while he's still the champion, you got to give him a little respect.
Yeah. And this is a side note on Bellator. They got to stop doing this thing when someone wins a title fight that Bjorn Rebney has to come into the ring and talk to us about how good of a fight it was. It's really unnecessary.
You don't want him to sell you on Ben Askren, too?
Oh, okay. Let's throw this out there right now. We're doing something. We're creating the banned list for It's Amazing Radio. All right?
Because we have that kind of cachet that we can just start kicking people off our show.
Exactly.
That's how big of a following we have.
I'm pretty sure last week we had the first banning with Carlos Condit by you. He's never allowed on.
I don't like me no Carlos Condit.
Yeah. And this week, Ben Askren cemented his position on the ban list by physically threatening Ariel Helwani. Let me tell you.
That was just unnecessary. It was very unnecessary.
No ripping on Ariel unless your name is Rampage or Nick Diaz. They've earned the right.
I think we would give that pass to Marcus Brimage, but it's not so much that he rips on Ariel so much as he says such inappropriate things that Ariel just goes into a panic.
Yeah. People get a chance. Listen to Marcus Brimage's most recent interview with Ariel, where he talks about the night of the Tough 14 finale where him and John Dodson did the kid and play dance at some Vegas nightclub. And then
I believe they got white girl wasted.
He did. He promised, and he delivered. All right. Well, Tough Live, Bellator, that's all fine and good, but we know what the main event was, folks. Finally, after 6 weeks, a UFC card on live TV. And they didn't disappoint at all, if you ask me. That was a good card.
I agree. That's the thing about these free cards is where they get a chance to put, like, guys who don't have a lot of star power. They may not be high up in the rankings, but when those guys fight each other, it tends to be good fights, you know? They have less to lose. They have more to prove. So it always tends to – it'll be the fight where you least expect it to be. Well, something pretty awesome might happen.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go through it. I mean, let's start with the main event. We had Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson versus one of mine and your favorite light heavyweight fighters, Thiago Silva.
And for the three people watching us, this is why we like Thiago Silva. Good old thumb across the throat slash. That's right. It is so mean.
We are
it
pushing this nickname, Murderface. I think it's very accurate.
He is the Murderface. All we need to do now is convince him to come out to the Murder Train song of How I Met Your Mother fame, and it will be complete.
That sounds good. We gotta get this dude. Has to see if he's on Twitter. We gotta start, you know, hassling him a little bit.
We gotta do the rally for Murder Train.
Exactly. All right. Well, the fight, Gustafson won. Two judges gave it to him all three rounds. One judge gave Thiago the second round. The second round, I thought, was close. I edged towards Thiago, but I know I'm biased. But Gustafson basically went out there and did a Dominic Cruz impression. It was pretty impressive.
I agree. You know, it's not so bad because I think Gustafson actually has some... I mean, in previous fights, he's shown he has power in those hands as he's put away guys. And if you look at Thiago's face, you know, he did get nicked and busted up a little bit. You know, with Dominic Cruz, after he fights, the guy looks clean. They might be a little sweaty. They might be a little tired, but they look clean. But Thiago had some visible damage. So, I mean, it's good for Gustafson because it shows that he's learning to use his height, his range. You know, you don't want to stand and trade with a guy who has the power reputation of a Thiago Silva. So and while you would have hoped for a finish, he did what he had to do, and he looked really impressive doing it.
And Thiago hit him a couple times, and he survived because there was a couple times in the second round. Thiago got a nice a couple of shots on him in a row, nice combo, and Gustafson recovered nicely.
He only has one loss in the UFC, and there's never been anyone who's put him in trouble in terms of a KO or a TKO. His one loss is a submission loss to Phil Davis, which is, you know, that's nothing to laugh at. So I think he is a very, very promising prospect for the future.
Yeah, and on Thiago Silva, Thiago lost, and it seemed like he was a little bit – he couldn't really get off, it seemed like. He was having difficulty pulling the trigger. But something Mike Goldberg noted, which was nice to see, was that Thiago was moving way better than he's moved in a long time because he's had back issues for his last two, three fights, and he was actually moving around fairly decently for a guy who hasn't fought in a year.
I mean, you definitely want to hope in 15 months that's enough time off to get your shit in order. I mean, you know, sometimes when you know you have a fight coming or you're trying to get a fight coming, you'll still be pushing yourself hard. But with this one, he knew he had the suspension, so I think it gave him the time to just – actually, you know, step aside, get some rest, let his back recover.
And he looked good. I mean, it didn't look like, I mean, he wasn't soft anywhere, and the weight cut didn't look like it was bad for him. For a guy who hasn't fought in 15 months, he didn't let himself get lazy.
Yeah, no, he didn't seem to gas out. If he got tired or slowed down at all, it's because Gustafson was hitting him with a lot of punches. You know, Gustafson kept the pace very, very high. You know, he didn't slow down. He was always moving, always in and out. So it was a really – it wasn't the spectacular finish I think we hoped for, but it was a good fight.
Yeah, and given the pace Gustafson put up, Thiago definitely was slowing down a little bit towards the end, but it didn't, at no means did he look, like, gassed or anything. I was impressed by that for a guy who hasn't fought that long.
But I guess I'll say this in the future because, you know, I've just been seeing people bring it out now. I guess where do you think this puts Gustafson in the picture?
What do we have in our rankings before, like 9?
I want to say he's in the back 7 to 9 range. I can't recall off the top of my head, sadly, even though it's our own rankings.
This is the first guy he's fought that I thought he could be put out, like he get knocked out. This is the first guy who – Thiago's been out for a year. Thiago was top 10 before he left.
Definitely.
So maybe.
But, I mean, there is that still layoff to account for. I mean, basically, before he gets into the true, true upper echelon where we start talking about as a contender, I think he needs to fight another grappler.
Yep.
Because Phil Davis showed what his weakness was, and we need to see now is, like, you know, a year later, how much better is he at it?
I'm looking at our top 10 besides him. We got Jones, Rashad, Hendo, Shogun, Machida, Bader, Phil Davis, Mr. Gustafson, Rampage, and Little Nog. I think either the Little Nog fight, which was it got delayed. He's when Little Nog got hurt. That was who his original opponent was. Little Nog or Machida would both make sense to me.
Machida, definitely, that was the first thing that was coming to mind. At first, I was thinking Bader because he'll be the most stylistically similar to a Phil Davis in terms of, you know, Bader will go for the takedown. He's not a guy who has him, who doesn't use it. He will always look for a takedown in a fight. You know, Machida, he has his trip takedowns. You know, he's very strong. But I think that'll just show how he is against the truly, truly top. A win over Machida, yeah, that would probably put him right into title contention.
Even Machida would be interesting because Gustafson, the way he's fighting now, is real moving around all the time, and you know, Machida's distance. I mean, standing up with Machida, you almost never look good.
Yeah, so, I don't know. So far, really only one fighter has looked good standing against him, and that was Shogun in the fight of Shogun's career, which he somehow lost. Although, I guess he did knock him out in the second one, so he still looked good in that one. But, yeah, I think any of those fights, I don't know, I'm not that interested in Lil Nog. Granted, I know we have Lil Nog above Thiago Silva, but I think with Gustafsson's most recent win, it kind of puts him past that range. I think he should be aiming a little higher than that.
That makes sense. Next fight that was up was Brian Stann versus Alessio Sakara. Why don't you take us through what happened there?
Alessio Sakara and Brian Stann, it's pretty much what we thought it would be. Brian Stann was coming off a loss to Chael Sonnen. We weren't totally sure how he was going to react. But, you know, Alessio Sakara is a nice boxer. They're kind of touting his jiu-jitsu background a little bit, but for the most part, I've never seen a Sakara fight really come to that. Brian Stann did what he always does. He showed heavy hands and a strong clinch. He dropped Sakara with a couple Muay Thai knees. I think it's pretty much very similar to how he knocked out Chris Lieben. And next thing we knew, Stann was in the guard punching away. Couple really short fists. You wouldn't think they would have the power to put him out.
Yeah, but, I was surprised by that.
It was kind of funny. Sakara just knocked out completely, and all of a sudden he woke up in a second. But in the replays, you could see it was a good stoppage. He was clearly out. But yeah, Stann, he's on a nice roll again. I don't know where he goes next. You know, he kind of showed he doesn't have he's not quite ready for the top. But, you know, he's ever improving, and he'll always be a good fight because he comes to, you know, he comes to swing. He has power and he can finish fights, but yeah, I really can't see who he's going to fight next in the division.
Winner of Usamar Paul Harris and Alan Belcher. That makes sense to me.
Winner of Belcher and Paul Harris?
Yeah.
Definitely. That would be a nice, good one. And then I think the winner of that, with a victory over Stann, that'd probably be a nice future contender as well.
Yeah, because I mean, I didn't know Munoz was booked to fight Weidman. I've totally missed that news. And,
yeah, I feel like I heard it, but I may have forgotten about it. I don't know. That matchup, I don't know. I don't like it for either of them.
Like, they announced Munoz, Weidman, and then Bisping and Boach. It should be Munoz and Bisping, and then Boach and Weidman, if you ask me. Those should be the real matchups.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. The reason I don't like Weidman and Munoz, it seems like a very big jump for Weidman, but it seems too far back for Munoz, if that makes sense. Because, you know, Munoz was on the cusp of a number one contender fight, and now he's fighting a surging prospect. Like,
I think
if he beats Weidman, it feels like it's supposed to, because he's supposed to beat Weidman.
I think the UFC must think really highly of Damian Maia. That has to be it. That if you beat, I mean, I know we hate on Damian all the time. They must think really highly of him to have Weidman move up this quickly off a win off Maia, where it was a pretty bad fight.
I guess it counts because it was such a short notice, too, but I don't know. Yeah, none of us were impressed with the Damian Maia we saw, so it just seems like a bit of a jump. But, oh well, I mean, Munoz is probably up next anyways, regardless.
I mean, hey, take advantage of the opportunities they give you.
Definitely.
Weidman. And next was a fight you and me were very excited for. Sire. Okay, I'll give it a shot. I'm Middle Eastern. I should get this, okay? Sayer Bahadurzada, all right? CR.
And real quick, I just want to interject. He is not Sire the Great. He is Sire the Afghan Killer.
Yeah.
You will use that nickname from now on. Yeah, that is what he is.
He
will not
Charles
call
Thiago.
Him the Great
tell
on
the
show.
He didn't look like the Great. He looked like the fucking Killer, all right? He put out Paulo Thiago with one punch. 40 seconds. End of fight.
You know, there's a couple of moments that, I mean, if you go back to Takeo Mizugaki versus Uriah Faber, that was one of the few other times where I thought someone died. The way Thiago face planted and he was just completely motionless for about 10 seconds, like, he was just out. He face planted so hard, it didn't look like he was even breathing. I thought he was just dead.
Like, Paulo Thiago has fought really good people. Like, he beat, you know, Josh Koscheck. He beat Mike Swick.
He's fought the cream of the division. He's fought John Fitch. He's fought Diego Sanchez. You know, he's a top. He's a top level welterweight. He's no joke. He's not a journeyman. He's a legit, legit fighter. But we've never seen him get put out, period, let alone in such violent fashion.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with him, though, because he was at one point he was 13-1 with his only loss being John Fitch. And he's lost 3 of 4 now. Two of them by decision to, you know, Martin Kempman and Diego Sanchez. No shame in those. I mean, you know, good fighters. But, I mean, he's now 3 of 4. I mean, he's going to have to reassess some stuff, I think. Things aren't going well.
I mean, I think a big critique on Paulo Thiago is, though, he's a great fighter. You know, MMA is not his full-time life. And, you know, I think part of why he's so well-liked and he's so popular, especially in his home country, is that his, you know, his, what is it? BOPE? I forget the exact.
I think it's BOPE, BOPE, or something like that.
Something, I'm not sure how to say it, but yeah, you know, the fact that he is this in this military task force, you know, that they're actually like fighting crime, saving lives, you know, he never fully committed to MMA, so I think it keeps him from his evolution going to that next level, but he's still a good fighter. It's not like he hasn't lost any chumps, you know, they're giving him good competition.
Yeah. But that's why it was even more impressive what Sire did to him.
Definitely.
Yeah. He's an immediate factor. I mean, you roll in, you knock out Paulo Thiago. That's no joke. They did not give him an easy fight. They clearly have some expectation he's going to do something at 170.
I guess so. I mean, that's how many more amazing ways are there to start your career is knocking off this name opponent in like brutal, devastating fashion. Possibly that will possibly be a KO of the year candidate just for how sudden it was. It was just so sudden and violent. And
I mean,
bam.
Paulo Thiago, you got to question the strategy of, I'm going to dive with a lunging punch against, you know, a Golden Glory kickboxer. Like, how was that a good idea?
Yeah, he had to close the distance somehow. You think he might set up with strikes a little bit, but everyone kind of knew Thiago's thing was to take it to the ground. But yeah, you might want to look where you're going when you have a guy with such strong fists.
He didn't get hit that flush. He just got hit right on the spot, like a little short little boop, and that was it. All right. Next, we had Seaver versus Nunes. Dennis Seaver needed to go to 145 for a while, and he finally did it.
5 foot 5, man. What the hell?
Exactly.
In the shocking event, he almost kind of missed weight. I mean, he ultimately hit it, but I think that made people a little nervous considering how small he is. But the dude is stocky. He is just a short little stocky stump.
And it was a good fight. I mean,
I liked it too. I saw that Dana was tweeting that he was kind of disappointed in it, but it's kind of what I expected it to be.
It was a nice, I mean, Diego Nunes is a really good fighter, but he has like technical fights, really. It's not a brawl ever. He has a technical fight with everybody, and that's what this was.
I mean, we've had our conversation about Nunes in the past. The thing is, he seems to be so physically talented and technically talented, but he lacks the aggression, you know. He was a guy who's coming out of Nova Uniao, and something I've associated with that camp is their sheer violence. If you look at the Jose Aldos or the Brandaus, they just come out swinging, looking to murder people, and Nunes, you know, it's more like he'll talk about it, but it's more like he'll point his way to a victory. And I think in this case, Seaver just had a little bit more power. You know, even though he had a little trouble with weight, you know, he didn't look to gas at all. He actually kind of stayed strong throughout all three rounds.
Something that's worth mentioning, Seaver just beat a top 5 featherweight. He beats one other featherweight. They might give him a title shot. That's how thin featherweight is.
Yeah, all the early light divisions are still finding themselves, but it's one of those things that even though it would be a new face, new name, new blood, I think we all know how that fight's going to go already.
They should make him fight Chad Mendes, I think. Chad has nothing to do.
I guess, yeah. Chad Money Mendes needs some money. Someone needs to give him a fight.
I think because he was talking on Twitter about how his next opponent was going to become clear soon and they were working on it. I think it almost was certainly going to be the winner of this fight. It just made sense, given where Nunes... Because Chad Mendes is basically waiting for Jose Aldo to leave the division, so Chad Mendes can be champion forever.
That's
I think Chad Mendes is clearly the second-best featherweight in the company. I think he's the second-best featherweight in the world, personally, because I think anybody not named Aldo would lose to him.
I mean, they haven't given Aldo another shot yet. They haven't really given it to Hioki. Are they still waiting for just Zombie and Poirier to play out?
They booked Aldo's next fight as the July Calgary card. But they haven't said who, and I think it basically comes down to if the winner of Poirier and Zombie isn't too beat up, they're fighting, but if he is, they're going to have to tell Hatsu Hiyoki, we don't care how, you know, not ready you think you are in terms of skill. It's time to fight Jose Aldo.
Yeah, I mean, Hiyoki has been sitting at, he basically entered the UFC as the number two featherweight in the world. So, I mean, how long can he keep fighting there? I mean, I understand why, you know, he has some clear weaknesses in his game, and it's smart, you know, better to not blow your title shot early, but like you said, it's a very shallow division.
I think, what about this? I just thought of this. Is there any way, if Hiyoki still doesn't want that, they make Seaver do it? Or they ask Caesar or Seaver to do it? I know he doesn't really deserve it, but it's featherweight, and who else? I'm looking at the list. It's him.
I don't know. It's...
You roll in, you beat one guy in the top five, you get a title shot. Kenny Florian did that.
It's tough, because, I mean, Seaver, granted, he had a little bit of a run for a little while at lightweight, but it's not like he went from that run on lightweight and then decided to drop. Kind of got knocked out pretty, like, silly. Crushed. Like, that way when Cerrone just kicked him in the face, dude was doing his little wobbly step all over the place. So there's the lasting image of him at lightweight is that, well, he actually never belonged there. So yeah. I don't know.
This is, I'm looking at it. You know what? He's won, his Cerrone loss was his only loss in the last six fights.
So, I mean, it's good, but you're just, it's gonna, that card would need a lot of help. They'd have to, it'd have to be a loaded card.
I think they announced some stuff for it. Let me take a look real quickly. Because there is precedent with Kenny Florian. Oh, Kenny Florian had a much better resume than Seaver at 155, let's be honest. But Kenny went down, beat Diego Nunes, got a title shot. That was it. And he was coming off a lot.
But like you said, Dennis Seaver is no Kenny Florian. Kenny Florian's a guy who'd fought for the title a couple of times. You know, he had developed this reputation that he's really good. He's just not good enough to be at the very top. You know, Seaver is a guy who's climbing. He doesn't carry that name value. You know, Kenny Florian's also one of the original Ultimate Fighters, so he's a guy people had known. You know, this little German who doesn't speak English very well, that's going to be a hard sell when Aldo's not a proven, you know, draw either.
This is not a deep card. I'm looking at it, what they've talked about so far. I'm sure they have more time. It's only April now, and the fight's in July, but Thiago Alves versus Yoshihiro Akiyama is an awesome fight, but that is not a co-main event of a pay-per-view.
A guy who's on, like, a 38-fight losing streak? Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of Canadians so far. I mean, they're going to have to put more stuff in this. I'm sure they will, but they're gonna need a hell of a co-main event if they're going to send out Aldo against.
Hey, we've been talking Shogun Lil Nog. Both guys need something to do.
All I want to do, I've been saying this for a while, there's only so many fights, it needs to happen. One of them is Shogun Lil Nog 2, and the other one is Rampage Shogun 2. So make it happen, all right? I don't care. At some point, just get it done.
Hey, you know what? If you put Shogun Lil Nog 2 on that card, granted, I know that's something for the Pride fanboys, the hardcore fans. It doesn't quite have the most name recognition to the casuals, but that would make me whatever card they show up on, I'm buying. Not that we don't buy all of them anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, at this point, they could put anything out there. We're paying for it. All right. Also on the card, John McGuire versus DeMarcus Johnson. None of us really knew who McGuire was. Except for the picture on Wikipedia where he had five belts. Remind me of Ultimo Dragon. And he beat DeMarcus Johnson by a pretty slick armbar.
I mean, while we're on the Ultimo Dragon tip, fun factoid I learned about Maguire, which instantly made me like him, is that the reason for his pink belt and black shorts is one of his heroes is Bret the Hitman Hart.
Everybody's hero is Bret the Hitman Hart, though. Let's be honest. There's no one who's just like, no, I don't look up to Bret the Hitman Hart. He's the excellence of execution. Let's be honest.
I mean, all I got to say about this fight is it should not have been on a main card. It's two pretty lower-tiered guys. It was a really slick armbar. You know, props to that. He won himself a submission of the night bonus, but whatever.
And the last main card fight was really entertaining for about 6 minutes, which is how long it took.
Oh, long Furious that, fight.
But 8 minutes. Damasio Page versus Brad Pickett. That was wild.
Like all really DeMasio back and forth. Lots of... dudes getting dropped, people getting reversed on the ground, leading to a slick submission. Big fan of Brad Pickett, and I'm happy he picked up a fight of the night bonus as well.
Yeah, and let's take a quick look at the prelims from this card. We had Poppy Abetti losing again. That was disappointing.
Number one middleweight prospect in the world, according to Bloody Elbow. He is not.
Well, he's fighting at welterweight. So.
Oh, yeah, well, whatever he was, he's just, whatever his prospect status is, it's been revoked.
I mean, I understand. I mean, they gave him Thiago Alves his first fight. You lost to Thiago Alves. There's no shame there. You got to be James Head when you're fighting at home. I'm sorry. You need to get it done. You need to at least not get your ass kicked.
Yeah, a little bit.
We had Cyril Diabate fighting a grappler from Ricardo Almeida's camp, Tom DeBlas, and probably the only boring fight of the night, which I think was a lot of it was a result of DeBlas learning about the fight 7 days ago.
It was a short-notice fight, and, you know, you could tell by the second he was really gassed out.
And it was a grappler versus a French kickboxer. I mean, it is what it was. Okay. Francis Carmona versus Magnus Seidenblad. That was only good because Magnus was kicking the crap out of Francis Carmona in the whole first round. And somehow, Carmona turned it around in the second.
Because he had some young Black and Jack power in that hand.
That guy's big. He's a huge middleweight.
Yeah, once he got his chance to get some ground and pound in, he completely turned the fight around.
And see a couple more. Oh, Reza Madadi. That's who I came to watch, folks. All right. I'm Iranian. We only have so many Iranian MMA fighters. This dude, first at the weigh-ins, where he almost got a shoving match with Izquierdo, and then jumped up and down into a joy that he was in the UFC, it seemed like. He then,
also appreciated that he came out to some very, very ethnic music.
Super Iranian music. Like, it's in my dad's CD case, I'm sure, right? That's what I'm talking about. And all the Iranian music is about the same stuff. I'm talking about a girl you're trying to bang, right? Not really related to fighting on any level.
But, it was a good fight. You know, he's a good wrestler, and he got his submission. But I think my favorite statistic of the fight was Reza Madadi, one strike thrown.
Yep. I don't remember that strike even being thrown, honestly.
I think he may have just reached out while he was shooting in, and they counted that as a jab.
Someone needs to work on Fuel TV's math, though, because one guy got he got zero takedown attempts. The other guy, Izquierdo, made zero attempts at a takedown, and then they gave Madadi 100% takedown defense. That don't work. He was zero. Was zero for zero.
You're 100% until someone takes you down. It's a deduction thing.
Last two fights, Jason Young won over Eric Wisely, and Simeon Thorsen beat Besam Youssef. People seem to love Thorsen. I don't know why. He was really loved, though. And this whole card, ton of chokes. You're a fan of chokes?
Yeah, overall, my biggest takeaway from this was I thought the Sweden audience, I thought they were awesome. Yeah. I think this is one of the coolest crowds they've been to really since they went to Brazil for the first time in like a decade. The fans were really knowledgeable. What was odd to me is I noticed they booed the first stand-up of the night. They just really appreciated the ground game, grappling. When people would reverse each other, like there'd be all this applause, you know. Of course, they had their homerism. All the Americans were booed, regardless of whether they were fighting a Swede or not. Yep. But all their Nordic fighters, they got behind all of them, and they just were a great crowd from top to bottom.
Yeah, and the thing is, they're pretty well. They showed how knowledgeable they are because they do have an MMA scene there. I think it's called Superior Challenge or something like that. Madadi came off of that. I think Abedi's fought there before, but I know Madadi's fought in a couple of their cards. And they got the referees were all wearing SMMAF shirts. I'm assuming that's Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation or something. So they got some infrastructure there for it. It wasn't like they were teaching an audience, this is fighting, you know, this is ground game. They seemed like, it reminded me like a Canadian crowd almost, a little bit. Not as respectful as Canadian crowd, but almost like a Canadian crowd.
I definitely think, this is going to be a market, though, where they're going to probably come to. It's probably going to become an annual spot. You know, they've dabbled with Germany. I don't think that has had its share of issues, you know.
Yeah, the
Canada markets are fickle depending on who's fighting. They always got to load it up with Canadians, but I definitely think Sweden's going to become a mainstay or a fixture for their European destinations.
Speaking of the international thing, Dana, I saw this article today, how he was talking about how they're going to try to put maybe some sort of regional shows on, like for specific areas, because the Tough Brazil has been a massive hit for them, and they're going to do a Tough UK versus Australia and Tough India, and at a certain point, there's only so many spots on these cards.
Hey, they're still talking about Tough Philippines.
Yeah,
that was in the initial talks.
Start winning.
It's happening. Philippines are a very good market.
They're talking about these things, and then Dana was making a point. He's like, instead of bringing all these guys over, we're just going to have to do more shows, and they're going to air in those markets, you know? Which kind of sucks for people like us who need to watch every fight, but
I mean, if it's as long as they make it available online, like Tough Brazil has been. You know, I've actually been enjoying watching the Tough Brazil more than the U.S. Tough Live this season. So, you know, if you make it available, the people who want to see it will find it.
The Tough, I mean, I think both Toughs have been better than regular Toughs, recent Toughs, because Tough Brazil has the charm where everybody fights the same way. They're all killers.
They're all Muay Thai BJJ experts.
The Tough Live is great because the fact that it's live and the way they air it, it's like I only care about the fight. Like when they show me other stuff about the week, like all this drama in the house, no one gives a shit. It's like when they were showing Chris Tickle's nonsense all this time, I think everybody was just annoyed that he was even doing it. Like, come on, man.
It's like we're trying to change the format here. Why are you instantly being a dick just for the sake of being one?
I know people have been talking about the ratings on Friday nights. I was reading, like, the ratings are good if it's a Friday night show, basically. And I think the UFC would prefer not to be on Fridays, but it is what it is, and they're doing well for Fridays. So.
Yeah, but that's not really that's not what you want it to be. You know,
they change it, though.
The audience that watches MMA, they're out getting drunk on Friday. I have admittedly missed the last 2 weeks of the Tough Live because I have been getting drunk on Friday.
You know? I think them showing they can draw a million people still on Fridays, over a million people, maybe next year would the FX be more willing to give them like a Wednesday night. I don't think it's that difficult, man. FX has a lot of good shows, but they don't have stuff on every night. What do they got going on Wednesday at 10? Wednesday at 10 was a great time.
I agree. I really hope they go back to Wednesday. That was the nice day. Especially with this one, we struggled a little bit that we had to watch the Tough Live on Friday, and then after that came the primetime special, and then they expected us to wake up at 9 a.m. the following Saturday.
Yeah. Dana, you got to help me out, man.
I mean, granted, that's a one-off because this is a European card, so the time difference is off, but I just don't like having to follow up my MMA days too consecutively.
Yeah, like, this, I can't do this. I need some time, man. I mean, 6 weeks was too much. Not that kind of time, but I need, like, this is Saturdays when I watch a card. Wednesday, during the week, I watch regular TV shows, and that's what Tough is to me. It's just a show I watch, you know? Mm. And that needs to happen on a weekday.
I want to do things on Friday. I want to be social.
Exactly. Okay? I'm not as sad as Dana White thinks I am, okay?
Let me live, Dana. Can I be?
Can we be? Can I do me, Dana? All right. After this card, Dana talked about a couple things. You saw how truly angry he is at Alistair Overeem. Because he doesn't even want to sock it. He says he cannot bring up the topic because he does not have the temperament. Those were his words. He doesn't have the temperament to discuss this. That's how disappointed he is with Alistair Overeem.
It's good that he's actually himself because, you know, the media already has enough ammo against Dana with the type of non-professional tirades he's been on in the past.
I love
that,
though.
If
hilarious.
He's this angry, it's good that he's kind of keeping it back there, not letting it come out.
So he pretty much crushed the rally for Mark Hunt.
Let's be honest. We all shed a tear at that moment. We had to pour one because that was about as disappointing as it could be.
Because we were having this conversation last week, and DJ Mark was doing his best to be as logical and fair, and Mark was totally right in everything he was saying in terms of pure logic and whether Mark Hunt deserves this. But some of us are deep into the Mark Hunt Twitter land and the Nick DeFace trailers where we're way past the point of logic with this. We don't care.
You know, if we had any technical know-how, Bobby, I would say that every 5 minutes on this podcast, 14.1 should be flashing on the screen. That's the 14-1 ratio just needs to keep flashing on the screen.
If you guys want to take a look at this video, Nick DeFace makes the best MMA trailers out there, no question. I don't know why the UFC hasn't hired him, but he made one for Mark Hunt. Just search YouTube for pound sign or hashtags, whatever the kids are calling it. Hashtag rally for Mark Hunt, all one word. It'll be the first video from Nick DeFace, and it's really well done.
Hey, you know what? I don't think Mark Hunt will be too sad. You know, he said, like he said on Twitter, he's been pretty busy with Hooters, porn, tweeting, eating food. Getting the hamburger.
Dana said it. He said it. He's like, this isn't disrespectful to Mark Hunt. It's I've apologized to Mark Hunt for what I thought he was going to do and how he's really, you know, how far he's come and how he's performed. He says if he beats Stefan Struve, his next fight will be a top five guy. That seems fair.
It's
honestly,
true.
That's the way
no,
it should be.
Logically speaking, he's not up for contendership. But I think, you know, there was this argument that I've seen a lot of people put online where they're like, oh, it's so unfair that Mark Hunt is just going to skip the line. But the fact was, it was a timing thing, too. it's not really skipping the line if there's no one available for Junior to fight.
There's
I mean,
one
on
guy
the basis that Mir and Kane is going to happen, if you're, it's going to happen, and Verdum is booked like a month later, everyone else was either injured in a fight too soon for them to fight again, or they're in a different promotion. Like, so if you want to say Mark Hunt is hovering around 12 or 13, that's because everyone 11 up to number 2, they had some type of thing where they couldn't do this fight.
Yeah.
That's another big reason this rally became so strong.
You got to treat this thing sometimes. I mean, I know it's a combat sport, but you got to treat it like this is a league. And sometimes, you know, this season, this team won. And right now, the things have come together. And they won 3 in a row, and they're fighting. It just happens. You know, the other guy might be better. You know, the Lakers might have lost in the second round. You think they're better than the Magic. But you know what? The Magic made it to the finals. What are you going to do? They're in a different side of the bracket. And you got treated like that because it's a league. It just happens. Everybody ends up fighting everybody. And all the things lined up for it to make the slightest amount of sense for Mark Hunt to fight Junior Dos Santos.
It's still coming. Hunt will have his day.
My little brother, who I know doesn't listen to this, but the second I told him about Overeem, he said he's going to get out of this. They're still going to have that fight. Watch it happen. And I didn't believe him, but I'm thinking he's going to get out of this.
Yeah, I agree. We're getting closer and closer. It's still another week until the hearing happens. You know, it's just taking out time to find a suitable replacement. If Dana is angry that Overeem has this, imagine how angry he's going to be when he still has to trot him out.
He's going to take it away from him. I think he has to take it away from him. There's no way you have him fight for the heavyweight title of the world. He does not deserve this. All right? He does not deserve this, okay? Is he really going to go out there and tell us all, which I'm sure he's going to do, that he has a TRT thing going on? You know that's what his argument's going to be. And it's going to be complete bullshit.
Just the whole thought of Overeem giving the TRT argument, that would just be ugly.
Look,
I don't even know what happens next after that.
We all love Alistair Overeem. I mean, I know I bet my beard against him winning, but you know what? It's a website. We got to make it interesting, all right?
He's still awesome. The Ream is one of the greatest online documentaries ever.
But I'm angry, too. We're all angry. This sucks. Like, we shouldn't be surprised, but it still sucks that this happened, you know? And he doesn't deserve a title shot. There's arguments to be made that his last fight should be overturned, for God's sake.
Yeah.
It won't. The argument that it should be overturned, it isn't as crazy as some people thought it was. I mean, he got that last license conditionally based on passing
It was based on him passing two random tests.
And he
failed the first of those two random tests. So, yeah, that is and should be the overturned. But we've seen these commissions are inept as hell. And that is going to be why he will somehow succeed in whatever his trial is in the next week.
I mean, I think it's if he doesn't get out of it, it's Werdum. I think it's Werdum either way. I think he's not getting a title shot. I think Werdum's fighting Alistair Overeem on May 26th. Not Alistair Overeem, Junior Dos Santos on May 26th. No one else is available.
Probably. I mean, we lose one of the great fights that we could have possibly seen, but. You know, you can't. There's no way you could reward a guy who just passed, or just should I say, failed a test that bad. Absurd levels.
You can't have a non-title fight for your heavyweight champion at heavyweight. That makes no sense for anybody. What if he loses? What does that do for your title? You know,
yeah, you just make it a super fight, non-title super fight.
You let everybody show up.
I don't know.
Over
My hope is that Hendo takes it. That's the wild card that I want to see thrown in there.
But, I don't know. This is a mess. Alistair made a mess. You know what? They really put all their eggs in his basket because they put all the heavyweights on one card. Which you think would be... I mean, if they refuse to break up Frank Mir versus Kane, which I think is a mistake, just give it to Frank Mir. I think he clearly deserves this out of everybody. We're all having fun and games with Mark Hunt, but this is Frank Mir's title shot now. You should have Frank Mir fight Junior and have Alistair fight Kane. If Alistair gets out of this somehow.
You're going to do the Nick Diaz card flop around, but you still appear on the card?
Yeah. I think that's what they should do. Or give it to Gabriel Gonzaga, because I love Gabriel Gonzaga.
I don't know. That's still weird to me, because then that seems kind of unfair to Kane. Like, sure, he's not fighting for the title anymore, but then Kane's fight to get back into the title contention is against this roided out, like, monster.
Well, if he is cleared to fight, how do they take him off the card completely?
I guess that's true, but I don't know. I'm sure Kane would be game. He's not the dude who's going to really back down from anything, but
Have him
as
fight Mark
someone
Andre.
who loves Kane Velasquez as well, I just don't want to see my man take another loss.
Have Alistair
Especially
Overeem.
One that would be a little tainted if it happened.
Have Overeem fight Mark Hunt.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine, because Mark Hunt will do anything. Mark Hunt don't give a fuck.
Well, this is Mark Hunt said something that made sense to me. He says everything Alistair's done at heavyweight has been tainted.
I think we've known that from the start.
And that's
confirmed. I don't think anyone ever gave him a benefit of the doubt. So
DJ Mark did.
No, that's just because like Mark likes a hammer that I like losers. Mark loves cheating steroid Japanese freaks.
All the guys I like have attitude problems. I've realized that too.
We all have a type. We all have a type.
Rampage, Nick Diaz, Thiago Silva. BJ's not a nice guy necessarily. Nate Diaz. None of them are good people. I mean, they're all...
BJ has a beautiful, beautiful baby mama.
That's the most important thing.
And that's all that really matters in life. He won.
All right. Well, that will shake itself out. I mean, they said April 24th, I think it is. It says something like that. It's like April 20-something.
Low 20. It should be coming up in about a week.
I think it's the week. It's like the beginning of the week after Rashad and Jones, which is my transition into talking about the biggest grudge match we've had in a while.
Rashad and Jones.
This primetime show has been okay. Not as good as the other ones that they've been doing, in my opinion. Could have been better, but I like that they're doing them in general. I think they're kind of cool.
I think they're always good, but it's just that it's not covering any new ground. You know, we've been hearing this for a while. Jones, he's not like Rampage. Rampage, he always knows how to be entertaining on the camera, whether you like him or not. He knows how to make it a show. That's where the Ali comparisons to Jones fall completely flat. Jones is not the personality.
Do you know what the Jones comparison, what the real Jones comparison is? It's Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
He's got no real, like, mic skills. He's very boring in terms of that. But he's fantastic when he plays his sport. Hopefully he doesn't end up banging a slew of... Actually, you know, hopefully he does. But for his sake, hopefully he doesn't. I think that's a better comparison. I think he's Tiger Woods. He's doing stuff that no one else does.
But yeah, he's not much for TV. You know, they brought in his brother, which is all cool. You know, you get to know his relationship. I'll admit, I didn't know the bit about his sister and everything and what happened to her. And, you know, that was a heartfelt moment, you know, and that was genuine. I thought that was really cool to see. It humanizes a guy that a lot of people think of as like the separate thing because he's just so unlike otherworldly good at what he does. But you know, we know the details of this rivalry.
Yeah, and I did not know the things about Rashad, how Rashad's whole life is turned upside down. Not just his camp, like he divorced his wife, and everybody knew Rashad's wife because Rashad's wife, you could hear her yelling whenever Rashad won something. Like she was loud. When Chuck Liddell got knocked out, it was silent, except for Rashad's wife going, ah! I mean, that was incredible. But Rashad lives in his giant house in Florida, which there's a couch and like a bike, a stationary bike in it. Like, he's just training. That's it. He's just, I don't know.
Well,
it's
I mean,
sad.
He's focused, you know, he wants this. I mean, it's the type of thing where if Rashad lost this fight, I could conceivably see him thinking about dropping to middleweight. I think that's what's on the line here. I think the future of Rashad's light heavyweight career rests on this fight.
He's too good, I think. I mean, unless he goes out there and he loses a fight that's close, there's no if he goes out there and gets finished by Jon Jones and it's not close, I don't think he has a reason to stick around in this weight class.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. You know, if it's close, if you know, if he shocks the world in some way, sure, stick around. But if he gets decisively beat, you know, I think it's going to be this thing. It's going to keep changing Rashad's world.
The thing is, though, if Jones is only 2-3 fights away from going to heavyweight, he keeps getting bigger and he's running out of guys. So he guess he could stick around and wait for that. Maybe he takes
just
like
keep maintaining
fight.
Those chicken legs.
Maybe fights him like he fights like a middleweight at like a 195 just for like a fun like. I don't know, like to make him, he has like, he fights like, pick a middleweight. That's interesting. There's not that many. I don't know. He fights Vitor Belfort for some reason, 195 pounds. That'd be a fun fight for Rashad. Or he fought like Shogun, because we were expecting that fight a couple years ago. But, everybody's dismissing Rashad here. And when people say Jones is a huge favorite and he's incredible and he's, if not the best fighter in the world, the second best fighter in the world, this is not to discount the fact that Rashad Evans is clearly one of the best light heavyweights in the world. He only has one loss. And that doesn't mean, I think he's getting a little bit of it's not that like people are saying he's bad by saying Jones is going to crush him. It's they're saying Jones is that good.
Yeah, it's very much the same as, I mean, granted, he slipped a little bit due to his most recent fight, but it's where Fitch had been for so, so long. Mm. He's clearly this dominant, winning guy. He just was beaten so bad by the guy at the top that it seems worse. You know, it's the thing about both Anderson and GSP that they've cleaned out their division, so people think the division is bad. It's not bad, it's just you've got one guy at the top who's standing a little elevated from everyone else.
You know, I think Rich Jones is going to win, and he's going to finish him. This isn't going to be as one side of it. I don't know. I could be totally wrong. I thought the same thing when he fought Machida, where I didn't think Jones was going to crush the guy as decisively as he did. And Machida ultimately got face planted, but Machida did win a round. Rashad, I think, is good enough to not get murked that quickly, honestly. I could be wrong, but I think Rashad's going to make this interesting for at least a round or so.
I mean, but that I think that tells you where we are with Jones. Is if the goal is to make it interesting for a round. The goal is not to win. It's just to be competitive.
I mean, I think like we've seen Jones' strategy in his title fights. I mean, he fought Shogun when Shogun hadn't fought in a year, and he fought brilliant strategy, which was blitzkrieg the man. He fought Rampage, knowing Rampage's hand. You know, Jones didn't want to find out right there how good his chin was, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was the best he ever used his range, you know?
Yeah.
Those little teep kicks and the push kicks to the knee. It's I'd never, you know, he has this length reach advantage, but he's never used it that good before.
With Machida, he lost that first round. In the second round, he used a clinch game and he bloodied him up, and he's good transition there. I don't know how he's planning on doing this with Rashad. What do you think? What do you think his strategy is going to be?
I mean, I think he's going to use his range again because you know Rashad is a shorter, he's a smaller light heavyweight. It's tough to say. I think what's ultimately going to happen, though, is Rashad will get the clinch on him, but Jones is strong. And I don't know what it is. It's just one thing he always does to fight off takedowns himself, and he just gets this guy in a front headlock. I don't know if it has to do with his height or his limbs, but it somehow has always nullified every takedown attempt on him. It happened against Bader. It happened against Machida. It happened against Rampage, where he just gets that front headlock and he's somehow able to control your posture so much that you can't do anything. And I think from there, ultimately, Jones will end up on top of Rashad. And that is where Jones is most dangerous, is when he's unleashing ground and pound.
What's interesting, I think, is I think Rashad's faster than him. Actually, I'm pretty sure Rashad's faster than him. Rashad's really fast.
I'd give Rashad a speed advantage.
I mean, Machida wasn't faster than him. Machida just had a really quick in and out. You know what I mean? Rashad's faster than him, period. Like, Rashad's very fast. And I think the first time he's fighting somebody who's definitely faster than him. So that should be an interesting test for him. If Rashad can get off on some punches and Jones, if he lands something and Jones doesn't have, you know, if Jones is the one trying to catch him, that'd be interesting. I don't know. Rashad, it's been said about him, he's, for being a small light heavyweight, he is incredibly difficult to get off you. Everybody he's fought has said this. You know, Tito's talked about it. Rampage talked about it. Everybody's talked about Rashad is incredible. Phil Davis couldn't take down Rashad. Rashad got on top of him at one point. Remember? I mean, that was.
Yeah.
Rashad is very, very good at making use of what he has. So I don't know. I think Rashad does a video of him breaking down Rampage's fight with Jones. And he talked about the way you fight Jones is you put your chin in his, like, chest. Like, you have to be right up on him.
Yeah.
Which I think he's going to try to fight Jones the way he fought Rampage, which is push him against the cage. Try to dirty him up, and then maybe try to put him on his back and unload ground and pound as best he can. That's got to be his worst strategy.
I mean, it ultimately will come down to the wrestling. It's going to be who gets on top, you know? Because, yeah, sure, that would be the – getting in on Jones would be the counter to his great reach. If his limbs are really long, he's not going to be good at those short strikes. But then if you get in too close to him, the type of wrestler that Jones is a Greco-Roman. So he's been very, very strong in the clinch. Like Matt Hamill, you know, he's no great world beater or anything. But the one thing you can say about the dude, he's strong as a moose.
Yeah.
The dude is just some dense muscle. And the way he was ragdolled like a little child by Jones is Jones' clinch takedowns are amazing. You know, no one has thrown him with that like vicious force. So that's the counter, you know, and it's going to come down to who gets on top first.
I by no means think Rashad's going to win this. I'm just actually intrigued by what's going to happen, though. I don't mean I think Jones is going to win, but I just think how it plays out is going to be very interesting. because Rashad's very smart, and he hasn't had a fight where I've ever thought he wasn't in control of what was happening besides the Machida one. You know what I mean? He tends to be dictating what's going on.
I mean, Machida was the one fight he fought outside his game.
That was why he doesn't train with Mike Winklejohn. He stopped training with Winklejohn a long time ago because Winklejohn's that came up with that retarded strategy.
Yeah.
Which was really dumb. Like, really impressively dumb, you know? I think, you know what? It was the same strategy Carlos Condit used against Nick Diaz. Except Evans did it against the wrong guy, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I think never mind. I don't even want to talk about that fight. I'll get angry. Like, I'll get Dana White angry if I talk about that fight.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know. I hope it's interesting. Jones fights tend to be interesting, even if he's crushing the guy.
Yeah, it's kind of, this is one thing I'll say. It's watching Jones is like watching Jordan for this one regard, and I'll remember this quote, that being Michael Jordan. You always want to watch him because you want to see what they're going to do next. They do such crazy, impressive things. You just want to be there to see it when it actually goes down for the first time.
Anderson's like that.
Yeah. Anderson is another guy. You just, what random ass trick are they going to pull out next?
But I mean, I don't really like these guys. I mean, I like Rashad, I think a little bit. I don't really care. I mean, it's not one of these fighters where I have to like, there's only so many fighters where I really, this guy should need, makes me feel better if he wins. You know, most of the time I don't care. Like, it's like if I'm in Machida fight Jones, I like Machida more than Jones, but whatever, you know. If it happens, same with this fight. I probably like Rashad more than Jones, just because Jones tends to annoy me these days, and Rashad is pretty entertaining for me off the camera. I think it's pretty fun.
Like we said, the only thing Rashad ever did wrong in his career was get on the bad side of Rampage Jackson.
Yeah, so he just got on the bad side of him. Jones went out of his way to annoy me while he did it too, when he's on Rampage's bad side. But I don't really care who wins this. Both ways is interesting to me. Whoever wins it, I mean, if Jones wins it. You guys still got the rise of, you know, Jones, and him versus Hendo would be interesting. If Rashad somehow won it, you'd have the, you know, the impressive upset. Probably the biggest upset this side of GSP and Sarah. Probably not as big because Sarah wasn't ranked. You know, throwing that out there, probably. This is probably in the Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn category of upsets, you know. But if Rashad somehow won, I think Rashad versus Dan Henderson would be a sick fight. So either way, the light heavyweight division has at least one more interesting title fight in it after this.
Yeah, I mean, anyone fighting Henderson is fine. You know, it's good for a shakeup. It's a talented division. You got a lot of guys who are aging, but I think there's a lot of interesting fights here.
Everybody needs a nemesis.
Jones is making everyone look bad.
Everybody needs a nemesis. Honestly, we didn't think Chael had a shot. He almost beat Anderson. Everybody needs a nemesis. If Rashad went out there, and even if he didn't win, he put a two-round beating on Jones, and the third one other round was close or something. That'd be, you know, and it was time I went to decision. That'd be, you know, awesome for the division. Everybody needs a nemesis. It makes everybody better. It brings the best out of everybody to have a nemesis, and it makes it way more interesting.
I mean, that's what made Ali great, is he had like five of them.
Yeah. Man, without Joe Frazier, Ali's not as interesting without Joe Frazier. Come on now.
Jones,
by the way, can't compare himself to Ali and then talk about the pressure of being compared to Ali when he's the one doing it. Okay, that's...
Like I said, Jones isn't the sharpest on the mic yet. He doesn't quite know what he's doing.
This is like what I'm eating when I'm eating pizza, and I'm like, man, I'm getting gassy. Like, well, like this is my fault.
You knew what you were getting yourself into when you signed off on this.
Before we call this today, we have a couple of minutes. We'll talk about the card a little bit quickly. Let's go through this card. Not that deep, but some okay fights to talk about. Rory McDonald versus Chael Mills. This is in Canada. Actually, it's not in Canada. It was supposed to be in Canada. It made it look more like a showcase fight, but it still is one. Because Rory should handle Chael Mills.
Yeah, this card is completely designed to be a Canadian card.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they moved all the fights from the Canadian card into this. Schaub versus Ben Rothwell. Two heavyweights beating each other up. I'm going to go with Schaub.
Seems like a nice bounce back for Schaub, you know? Got a better tank, has more power in his hands.
Probably
sure,
gonna be fight of the night if you ask me. Either this fight or a fight I'm later gonna talk about. Torres versus Michael McDonald. That's gonna be good.
I think it's a little early for McDonald to be taking such a leap, but you know he did win impressive fashion his last one, and it's a bantamweight fight with guys who will scrap. So Those are all as high paced. They're all as energetic.
Not only am I surprised that they booked this, I'm surprised that McDonald isn't that big of an underdog at all. Like, Torres is like minus 140. Miguel Torres has like 45 wins. He's very good.
It's true. I think he just some of the luster has come off him a little bit just because he's been more conservative since he lost to Cruz and then had his head sliced open by Benavidez. He's not the same fighter he used to be. He doesn't have the same killer instinct.
Hey, he didn't lose to Cruz. He lost to Bowles. I would love to see him fight Cruz. That'd be
My bad. Yeah, Bowles. But still, since he got knocked out and then he had that massive gash taken across his head.
Yeah, Benavidez. That was incredible. He just had a hole in his head. You could see into his soul. That was incredible.
It was very Japanese anime style where it spurts.
Yeah.
Like it's just squirting out.
If I think Torres, winner of this fight is one. Bantamweight's kind of clogged because, well, Uriah and Cruz aren't fighting till July. But after that, it's probably going to be maybe Barao fights the winner of this fight for a title shot. Makes sense.
I mean, if they need the fight, you could just do a title contender at that.
Because Barao would be waiting
just till
the end of
one
time.
Of them.
Barao doesn't fight, take this fight. Barao's probably the number three. He's the number three guy, according to us and everybody else. He's going to have to fight somebody if he's not going to fight again until October. That's a long time to wait.
Yeah, if it was Torres or McDonald, it'd be a great fight against Barao. They're all strikers, you know. So I'm always down for a striker versus striker fight.
Yeah. Also, we got Hominick versus Eddie Yagan. Eddie Yagan's okay, but Hominick should be able to take him out there, I think.
Bounce back fight.
Yeah. Bocek versus Alessio, two Canadians, decent grappling fight. Chad Griggs brings his illegal style of fighting to the cage against Travis Brown.
The mutton chop mauler.
Yeah. Watch out for this. We should have it up either tomorrow or Tuesday. Our buddy Jason Helms, well, my buddy, everybody else's acquaintance, is writing an article about Stephen Wonderboy Thompson because they got their black belts together in Kempo, and he knows him a little bit, and he's writing an article for us, and hopefully should be up either tomorrow, which is Monday, or Tuesday. He's taking on Matt Brown in what should be a very difficult fight for him because Matt Brown's very well-rounded.
The Immortal.
MacDessy versus Njokuani. Njokuani's going to throw some nutty strikes.
MacDessy, I think this one could be a fight of the night. It's two exciting kickboxer types.
Mac Danzig versus Efe Escudero. Efren Escudero is a good fighter. I mean Mac Danzig, good fighter. Two guys who went Ultimate
Fighter. A battle
of
two fairly irrelevant Ultimate Fighter champions.
Yeah. And a fight that I'm looking forward to more than any other fight on this card besides the main event. Marcus Brimage, friend of the program, friend of the website, against the completely insane Maximo Blanco. And
this is a very scary and dangerous fight. In case he forgets, though, because I was last talking to Marcus about getting him to come out to the Dragon Ball Z theme music, I'll have to remind him because he thought it was a good idea several months ago, but he didn't have a fight book at the time.
Yeah, and so, I'm going to find a way to write something about Marcus for this week because he's just a nice guy, and I've talked to him a couple times on Twitter since, and he's just funny. So we're going to find a way to talk about something about him. So look out for that.
Someday we'll get him as a guest on our show, Bobby, someday.
We got to figure it out. Once we figure the audio out perfectly, that'd be awesome. But Maximo Blanco's a good fighter, though. This is a tough fight.
Yeah, that dude's going to come out trying to take his head off. It's a very, very dangerous fight for him. And I thought, the first time I ever saw it on paper, I'm like, whoa, it seems like a crazy step up. But, you know, if he gets a win, it's a very big feather in the cap.
This is on Facebook. It's the first fight of the night. And I don't know. I think it'd be very. Maximo Blanco is not as well known as he should be, and he's very good. So, yeah. So this is a good card. I mean, in terms of the main event being huge, really, that makes it good. It's a big fight.
I mean, there's quality fights on it. It just lacks a lot of title implications or divisional implications. There's not going to be too much movement in the standings based on this card.
Yeah, the most important fight, honestly, the most relevant, is probably Torres and McDonald after the main event.
Yeah.
But, we'll be back next week to talk about this card.
Hopefully the gang will all be here.
The gang should all be here. We'll be previewing. Actually, no. Was it next week? No, yeah, next weekend we'll be around to talk about the we'll have to talk about the UFC on Fox card because unless we do something wrong, we're going to miss the podcast after that. It's going to be an It's an Amazing Trip to Lake Tahoe the weekend after that. But we'll have to work something out for that.
We could always film on location.
That's true. We could do that.
From the Harrah's casino floor.
That's true. That's right. We do it big. We go to Harrah's.
Hey, there's only like two places to go in Reno.
We can't believe we talked about this. We got to throw this out there real quickly. The rematch, Eddie Alvarez versus Shinya Aoki's Friday night.
Shinya motherfucking Aoki. Nippon forever.
Yeah.
None of you believe. I'm the only one who believes in Shinya. You guys just rank him because you think he should be there. He deserves to be there.
Well, if he beats Eddie Alvarez, yeah.
Again? He's got to beat him some more? He already beat Eddie Alvarez.
In like a minute and a half.
Yeah, Eddie Alvarez should have been better. If Eddie Alvarez was so good, he would have lasted 2 minutes.
I'm not going to stand. I'm not going to say to defend Eddie Alvarez right now. right. Yeah, watch out for that on Friday. I think there's another good fight on it. It's Bellator, whatever. Look it up. Google that shit. It's a long podcast already for just two people. Thanks for everybody listening. Thanks to our sponsors. We don't have any. But if you were our sponsor right now, I'd say thanks for using the Fleshlight.
It's a Sprite.
Sprite. Yeah, I want Fleshlight. Can we get Fleshlight to sponsor us? They sponsor Rogan. They're selling a pocket pussy.
I don't really
pussy.
Want one of those.
They sell a pocket pussy. How above us are they?
Oh, I don't know. I still think I could do better than either of those things, but all right, whatever. Sponsorship is sponsorship. I'll take it.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the fights. Oh, and Childish Gambino is going to play us out because we're seeing them Thursday in Oakland at the Fox Theater. You should go see him.
It's going to be a good show.
He loves Asian girls. If you're an Asian girl and you're listening to this, you should go. You might be able to hook up with him.
UCLA.
UCLA. All right. Thanks, everybody. Peace.
Right, Gambino is a mastermind. Fuck a bitch to pass the time. Mass appeal, orange rind. Smoke your green, I'm spending mine. The beat is witch's brew. But beware, this shit is potent. E.E. coming on her face. Now there's poetry in motion. Yeah, Gambino make it work. I'm the boss, move something. Yeah, this cool fucking suits me. Swag too, but and yeah, these girls be acting.